alarmed, fearing that it might carry Babesia. But however cunningly I tried to remove the parasite, he prevented me and interpreted my actions as an invitation to a game. It was a lovely afternoon, peaceful and timeless. Everything around us held memories of Elsa, and how like her Jesper was, with his intelligent expression and friendly, responsible nature. We took many photographs, and only went home after the sun had turned a deep red. During the next 2 nights, the cubs stayed away from camp. After hearing a lion call from the far side of the river, George followed their spoor, discovered that they had drunk at the point where the river comes nearest to the Woofing Rock, and that after drinking they had crossed to the other side. The next day, he found their pug marks about 2 miles downstream, close to those of a lion and a lioness. All led to the rocky ridge to which Mackayday had traced Elsa's spoor last July, after she'd been absent for 16 days. I could not join George in these searches, for I had cut open my shin on a tree stump, and I decided to seek help from the mission hospital in the nearby hills. George had to leave for Isiolo the day I returned from hospital. That night no cubs appeared, and I did not know whether to be pleased or worried. If they had joined up with a pride and were being taught to hunt by a lioness, then they would go wild before the question of deporting them arose, and this would probably be the best thing that could happen to them. On the other hand, they might have been driven away from the camp by the wild lions and be in desperate need of help. The state of my leg made it impossible for me to join Mackayday and Nuru in searching for the cubs. I tried to make the best of my handicap by telling myself that it would at least prevent me from interfering, and that this was a good thing because if the cubs had been adopted by a pride, any disturbance might cause their foster parents to abandon them. Still, I did not know that they had joined up with a pride, and the uncertainty was distressing. Another 2 days and nights passed without news of the cubs. Then George returned. He at once made a search, which proved fruitless. Next morning, he and Nuru set out again, and found that the cubs had joined up with a young lion and lioness. Feeling sure now that the cubs had been adopted by a pride, George did not pursue them for fear of upsetting the foster parents. We began to believe that they had themselves solved the problem of their future, for we had not seen them for 12 days. On the 16th of March, George and Nuru left early for their daily search. I was alone in camp when 2 game scouts and an informer arrived to report that during the night of the 13th, 3 lions had attacked the bomas of tribesmen on the Tana River and mauled 4 cows. The Africans had tried to drive them away with stones, fire, and wooden clubs, but they had persistently returned. They believed that the raiders were Elsa's cubs, and they begged George come and dispose of them. I immediately sent the men to contact George, which they eventually did by firing shots. They all returned to camp, and after lunch set off for the scene of the raids. In all, there were 8 bomas within a short distance of each other. They consisted of groups of small circular mud huts, protected by a shoulder-high thorn fence, some 6 foot wide. The country surrounding the bomas was dense bush, which meant that a lion could approach the huts without being seen. The bomas were close to the River Tana, where the tribesmen watered their stock. George saw the spoor of a lioness. She had entered an almost impenetrable thorn enclosure, and then forced her way out of it. He then tried to examine other lion spoor, and came upon new pug marks recently made by 3 lions. He felt convinced that these were not our cubs. Facts which helped to strengthen his belief were the cunning manner in which the lions had attacked the village and forced their way through the particularly strong thorn fence, and also the apparent ease with which the 2 fully grown cows had been killed. All this suggested the work of experienced lions. George told the tribesmen to report any further raids immediately and then return to camp. The next day, a terrible thunderstorm struck, and all through that night the downpour continued, and by the morning the river was only just fordable. Nevertheless, an informer managed to get across. He brought a message from the head man of the Tana settlement, stating their stock had again been raided by lions. On hearing this news, George set off in his Land Rover for the scene of the raid. It had been raining so heavily that he was obliged to make a circuitous route. I remained in camp to keep a lookout in case the cubs were still in our area. 2 mornings later, I was greeted by 2 game scouts with a letter from George. This is what he wrote. Got to the settlement on the evening of Sunday the 26th, after travelling 40 miles over bad roads and 8 through thick bush. In the morning, I made camp some 2 miles from the village on the banks of the Tana and walked down the river to look for spoor. Saw nothing fresh. Later, the scouts arrived to report that the lions had tried to enter another boma during the night, but were driven off. The scouts had followed their spoor, but lost it. Yesterday evening, I sat up over a carcass in a clearing 1/2 mile from this other boma. About 11 p.m, without any warning, little Elsa suddenly appeared and pounced on the carcass, which was fastened to a tree stump. She was followed immediately by Jesper, who had an arrow, fortunately not poisoned, sticking in his rump. Both started to eat. Presently I saw Gopa lurking in the distance. Finally he also came to the meat. They were extremely thin and looked starved. They showed no fear when I talked to them and finished off the diminutive goat in an hour. They frequently came up of their own accord to the bowl of water I'd placed close to the back of the car. I'm confident that they recognize my voice, and I'm sure they will come again tonight. There is no doubt that it is the cubs that have been raiding the bomas. We will have to pay lots of compensation. Send Ibrahim with your Land Rover at once with all the goats, some more food for me, also my small tent, table, chair, and my boxes. I must immediately take on a gang of local men to cut a track, and then we will have to move the whole camp and get a lorry here with crates, and finally move the cubs out of this district. But the most urgent thing is to send the goats with Ibrahim. If the river is too high, he will have to go the long way round, but he must get here today. The cubs are very hungry and will certainly raid another boma unless I feed them. There is no doubt that all the trouble has been caused by the fierce lioness who must have chased the cubs away from Elsa's camp. When I read this, I felt as if all my blood were draining from me. The only hope now was to pay such heavy compensation that the tribesmen would not be in too great a hurry to get rid of the cubs, and at the same time to find a safe place for the family with the least possible delay. Since there was no longer anything to keep me in camp, I immediately set off with Ibrahim and a scout as guide, 5 goats and all our essential camping material. We reached Tana just before dark. While we waited for the arrival of the cubs, intermittently switching on a powerful spotlight to guide them, George told me about Jesper's wound. On the night of the 25th, a number of tribesmen set out to kill the lions. They cornered one of them, in fact Jesper, in the thorn enclosure which protected a flock of goats. The lion had killed 2 of the goats, but before it could get away with its spoil, was surrounded by a band of angry tribesmen armed with bows and poisoned arrows. The lion took cover in the thick thorn fence, and into this the African shot about 20 poisoned arrows. Luckily, the fence was so thick that the arrows did not penetrate. Only 1 shot, loosed by a toto, found its mark. Fortunately, the arrowhead was not lethal, as the toto was too young to be trusted by his elders with the deadly poison. The arrowhead had luckily not penetrated deeply into Jesper's rump. The barb and 3 inches of the shaft could clearly be seen running under the skin, and as Jesper could easily lick the wound, there was a good chance of his keeping it free from infection. It did not seem to hinder his movements, nor could it be causing him any pain, since George had often seen him lie on it. The cubs were very friendly and did not object to his presence, but of course there was no question of Jesper allowing him to remove the arrowhead. We then made plans for solving our immediate problem. George decided to sit up at night inside his Land Rover on routes which he thought the cubs would take to reach the bomas. He would have meat placed ready for them. I would do the same at the camp, while the scouts, equipped with thunder flashes, would protect the various bomas. Should any of us see the cubs, we would warn George by firing shots. One if the scout sighted them, two if I did. When it got dark, George left for his vigil. But on this night, the cubs took a different route, raided a boma and mauled a sheep. Before they were able to feed, they were driven off by the scout's thunder flashes. The rains were due to start very soon, and we were worried because when this happened, we would be immobilized if we did not have a four-wheel drive lorry. The old Thames lorry was useless in virgin bush, and we could not borrow Ken Smith's Bedford truck for an indefinite time. We also needed a lorry to bring up our camp kit, to help the labour gang, and above all, for the final move when we had caught the cubs. Indeed, for this, we should need two lorries, for we saw the convoy as comprising a lorry for the lions, a lorry for our camp kit, and two Land Rovers to carry our personal baggage. I decided that I'd better go to Easyolo and order a new Bedford lorry, the same size as Ken's, on which the three travelling crates already ordered could be loaded. Next morning, after hearing that the cubs had tried to raid two bomas but had been driven off before doing any damage, I started off with our faithful Ibrahim. When I inquired about ordering a new Bedford lorry, I was told that delivery would take about 3 weeks. This was very inconvenient, so I asked if in case of an emergency, we could hire a truck from a safari firm. This, I was told, was possible, and after making the necessary arrangements, I started back in Ken's truck to Elsa's camp to pick up the kit we'd left behind and to sleep there. The night was very still, and the soft moonlight blended everything into a peaceful harmony. I lay awake, and late in the night, heard the cub's father circling the camp, woofing, and afterwards moving to the big rock, finally crossing the river. This was the last night I spent in our old camp, which had been like a home to me. We arrived about tea time at the Tana, and George greeted me with the news that although he had tracked every day and sat up every night, he had not once seen the cubs, but each night they raided a boma. George looked worn out with sleepless nights. Anxiety and the worry of knowing that his work was piling up at Easyolo, but while the present crisis lasted, he could not leave the Tana for a single night. Next morning, a tracker reported the spoor of a single lion heading in the direction of Elsa's camp, but he had lost the pug marks eventually by the river opposite the scout post. That evening, George suddenly saw Jesper and little Elsa. They were terribly emaciated, and the arrow was still in Jesper's rump. Neither, however, seemed nervous, and Jesper licked the cod liver oil out of the pie dish. They ate ravenously and did not leave till 5 a.m. After this, we thought it likely that Gopa had deserted his brother and sister, and that it was his spoor the tracker had seen heading in the direction of the old camp. George spent the rest of the day paying out heavy compensation to the tribesmen. In the evening, he waited at a place close to where he thought the cubs were lying up. They did not appear. Instead, they had gone to the spot where they had seen him the night before, and not finding him, raided three bomas. In the morning, the trackers caught sight of two bolting cubs. Later, a scout arrived from Elsa's camp and reported that during the night of the 5th of April, a young lion had been there and left pug marks all over the place, where George usually pitched his tent. Afterwards, he had gone off towards the big rock. On the following night, he had returned and had gone first to the tree we used as a bush fridge, then to Elsa's grave, and finally into the old crate. This confirmed our belief that it must be Gopa. No doubt disgusted at being chased out of the bomas before he could get a meal, hunger had prevailed over his natural timidity, and he had made the journey home on his own, hoping to find us in camp with a square meal ready for him. If Gopa were to act as guide to the other cubs and induce them to return to Elsa's camp, this would greatly facilitate our task. That night, the cubs passed within 100 yards of George, on their way from a boma where they'd eaten a dead goat. We were desperate. The atmosphere was heavy with rain, and after I went to bed it started to pour. I felt worried about George, sitting up in this deluge in his small tent, surrounded by lions. Also, the hippo's booming sounded very much closer to my tent than I cared for. But in spite of these anxieties, I dozed off. I woke, suddenly conscious of a rhythmic swish-swishing noise. I could not make out what it was, perhaps a broken branch brushing against my tent. Then one of my tent poles collapsed. I flashed my torch and saw that the swishing noise was made by waves lapping against my tent. I could see that the hinterland was already a swamp, pocked with deep pools, and this was the only place to which we could move if the river did not get there first. I yelled to the boys, but in the thundering roar of the Tana, they could not hear me. I ran over to them. The flaps of their tents were tightly fastened, and they were all sound asleep in what were now proper traps. Indeed, if I had not reached them when I did, they might all have been drowned. Ibrahim organized the panic-stricken men and got most of our kit out of the torrent. We were safe for the time being, but I realized it would only be a matter of minutes before the hinterland, our only refuge, was also flooded. I stuck a stick into the mud to mark the water level, and I could hardly believe my eyes when I saw that the water remained at the same level. The flood had reached its full height just before it would have carried our camp away. We waited, drenched and exhausted, for dawn to break. At first light, George appeared stiff and cold and wet. When the downpour began, all the tent poles gave way and the tent collapsed on top of him. For the rest of the night, he'd huddled beneath the wet canvas. By breakfast time, the river had fallen 6 feet. Scanning the lashing waves with field glasses, I saw amongst the debris a dinghy perched upside down on the top of a tree growing on one of the islands. I also observed a beautiful Goliath heron on the opposite bank. He was smashing a fish in rapid strokes against a rock. I thought how hard he was working for his breakfast. The next evening, George found Jesper and little Elsa waiting for him, and for some time he sat in the dark and heard them contentedly eating. Later, when he switched on his headlights, he was surprised to see 3 cubs. Gopa must have just arrived, for he was formally greeting his brother and sister. He had been away for over a week. Day by day, the weather was getting worse, and although up to now the cubs had not collaborated in our plans to catch them, we thought it was vital that we should get the crates up before the rain made transport by lorry impossible. To collect all the things we required, I set off with Ibrahim for Isiolo. There, I heard from Major Grimwood that after negotiating with a number of game reserves, he had obtained permission for us to take the cubs to the Serengeti National Parks in Tanganyika. I was most grateful to him and extremely pleased, for the Serengeti is famous for lions and an abundance of game. I felt that we could not have found a better home for Elsa's cubs. I wrote to the director of the national parks, thanking him for his generous offer and pointing out that for a month or two at least, the cubs would still need our help, since they were only 16 months old, and a short time ago still had their milk teeth and would not be able to hunt independently until they were 2 years. I also mentioned that Jesper had an arrow in his rump. It rained without stopping while I was at Isiolo, and I itched to get back before we were cut off by the floods. When I finally arrived, complete with 3 crates and a lorry, George told me that the cubs had come to him during each of the 4 nights I'd been absent, and that though they had tried to make some raids, they'd been driven off before any damage was done. This was certainly an improvement, but we still felt as though we were living on a volcano. The bush all around us was swarming with herds of goats and sheep, and these herds were in the charge of small children. The sooner the cubs were captured and removed, the better for everybody. To this end, we cleared an opening in the bush close to the place where they were in the habit of lying up during the day. There we placed the 3 crates side by side. George suspended their trap doors by ropes running through pulleys fastened to a straight tree trunk, which he had secured horizontally above the crates by driving both ends into the forks of the two trees,